We need to continue to get better in a lot of areas. I thought Robert did some good things with the first offense. Protection was pretty good. We got some work to do with a football team, offensively and defensively. But at the same time, I thought there was some really good things.
Good Sunday morning to you, and welcome to Berea for another edition of the Dog Pound Report. Boys, we are halfway through the preseason for the Cleveland Browns, and it's been an exciting time. We've seen some growth, and we've seen some teaching points as well. He's Nathan Zagura. He's Matt Wilhelm. Where are we now, two games into the preseason?
Well, we're halfway to the regular season. We can start with that, but we're a team right now that needs to find its identity on the defensive side of the football. But offensively, it's exciting. 6 of 8, 96 yards, 2 touchdowns from RG3 last week. Terrell Pryor continues to impress. And now I just want to see Josh Gordon out there and Corey Coleman out there. And I want to start getting fired up. But to me, where we're at is this is a team that you can tell. You can see the potential on offense. Defensively, though, there are some issues.
There definitely is. And I think it is a passing league. It is a scoring league. And I thought when Hugh Jackson took this job, he said, we're going to score the football. When we drafted Corey Coleman, he said the kid can score touchdowns. And what we've seen thus far with RG3 and some of his weapons is they're going to score the football. And as you said, Nathan, on the other side, the defense is just not good enough. And I don't necessarily know if it's so much about the scheme, because we've heard Ray Horton say this scheme works. It's about finding the right pieces in this scheme. And I don't think we've figured that out yet. And that's why this upcoming week in Tampa Bay is going to be so big.
All right, we know what you two think about the first two games. Here's what Hugh Jackson thinks about the first two games.
We need to continue to get better in a lot of areas. I thought on offense, I thought Robert did some good things with the first offense. I don't think we're world old yet, but I see potential of us being what I think we can be. I think on defense early, I think we're seeing a common theme that people are starting to run the ball at us pretty good. And we need to get that shored up fast. And obviously, we got to cover better. So we got some work to do with our football team, offensively and defensively.
Matt, what did you learn from the Atlanta game?
Well, the one thing is, we're not yet where we need to be defensively as it comes to the run game. And I think a little bit is not so much with the gap responsibilities as I kind of identified, you know, in years past. It's just guys that aren't, they're not sure yet. And we're seeing guys, Jamie Meter gets the start. We're still trying to figure out who's going to replace Dez Bryant. And then lastly, the one thing that I know of this defense is this defense is not going to be the type of defense that's going to go 10-play drive, 10-play drive. You know, they can't be susceptible to long drives. This is a burst, similar to our offense. They're going to be sack the quarterback, pass breakups, get off the field, because you get Joe Hayden, Paul Kruger, Nate Orchard, those guys making plays. But when they're on the field too long, it's going to make this a tough game for us.
Yeah, the defense has been on the field for 40 minutes in each of the first two preseason games. And you thought week one, that's a little bit of an anomaly. But then it happens again, over 30 first downs, 32 in the game. They allowed almost 6.5 yards of play, over 200 yards rushing, 500 yards basically total offense. It's not good enough. And if you want to win in the National Football League, you've got to be able to get off the field. They had as many third and fourth down conversions as the Browns had first down conversions. So this D's got to do better.
All right, let's talk about the quarterback situation, because RG3, it really isn't a situation the way he looked in game number two. Here's what RG3 had to say after game two.
Yeah, we were able to get things clicking a little bit out there, working the long ball. Still got a lot of things to work on. And, you know, just as a team, you know, continuing to work on doing things the winning way. And, you know, I think that's what Coach echoes to us after the games. And we got to continue to hammer that in from the older guys all the way down to young guys. And we will.
All right, Nathan, when we talk about RG3, I see a guy who's a leader out there. I see a guy who's extending what the coach wants out on the field. And for everything that was said about RG3 prior to playing for the Browns, I've been completely impressed with everything he's done.
Well, I think this was a guy who was humbled down there by his time in Washington. You go from being the rookie of the year to the scout team safety, and I think that changes you, and you realize this is your opportunity. And RG3 is taking advantage of that opportunity. He looks very good, and the thing is, he's having fun playing football again. I asked him about that after the game, and he said, it's been a long time since I've had fun. And he looks good. Remember the number I talked about in the preseason? Under 2.5 seconds that he had to get the ball out. He's averaging 2.43 for the first time in his career, and I love seeing that.
I do too. What I love seeing about RG3 is I love his footwork. The things that he's applied himself to all offseason with Pep Hamilton and Hugh Jackson, we're seeing applied in game scenarios. The other thing I love is he's staying in the pocket. RG3 2002, 2013 would deviate out of the pocket, run around like a chicken with his head cut off. He's making the throws from the pocket. And then the other aspect that we have to love is that zone read. that RG3 can read that end, pull that football, get you 14 to 20 yards, get down, get safely, and get back in the huddle.
Anybody teach him how to slide, though? Were we concerned about the slide?
It's not the prettiest thing, but it's effective because he's not getting hit. He was the leading rusher in his time on the field, and you just want to see that. It's just another weapon, can allow you to pick up yards, get first downs, and it's going to help Isaiah Crowell, who I thought looked pretty good in those first opening series.
Oh, it definitely will, and I think your ability to throw the football down the field the way we did, run that zone read, will open up and loosen up a defense from front to back and side to side when you're reading that end in the zone read situation.
I can't wait to see this first team offense when they get cooking, when you've got all your wide receivers here. How much fun is that going to be?
It's going to be amazing. I'm already having a great time, but we haven't seen Coleman. We haven't seen Gordon. We haven't even seen Andrew Hawkins. So Terrell Pryor, what he's done, nothing short of phenomenal, and all the credit in the world to him, his hard work, and obviously the coaching and tutelage of Al Saunders. But this offense has the potential to be as exciting as we've seen in Cleveland, certainly since 2007.
Yeah, the big question is, will we see those guys this week in Tampa? Because this is our mock game. This is the closest we're going to look to the team that's going to trot out on the field at Philadelphia against the Eagles.
The question on Pryor that still keeps coming to my mind is, how did he leap from a guy, and it wasn't because of injury, now because of camp, because that's creeping into my mind more when we talk about Terrell Pryor, that was he injured so much during camp last year that he wasn't able to do any of these things?
I think there's a couple things when it comes to Terrell Pryor. Terrell Pryor was a guy that most of his career rolled his helmet out there. He was the best athlete and had to put the least amount of work into it, and it just happened because he was a great specimen. And I thought when he made the position transfer last year, it was an opportunity for him to dive into something new. He thought, it's because I'm 6'5 and I run a 4'3 that it's just going to happen at the snap of a finger. The injury didn't help. He wasn't running a lot of routes. He wasn't out there in practice, and we're seeing him out there each and every day. And a guy like Al Saunders, really just honing in on everything he needs to work and bringing him along each and every day. We've seen that in these two preseason games.
He's put in the work. He's working very hard. He's obsessed with film study. I know he got some tips from Randy Moss. That obviously helps. And Al Saunders, that helps you as well. But he's put in the work to get from a guy that couldn't get off the line of scrimmage against the Buffalo
Bills, and we saw it,
to a guy who just roasted Desmond Trufant, who is a darn good corner in the National Football League.
By two and a half steps. It was amazing. All right, we've talked about the offense. Let's talk about the defense a little bit, and you guys touched on it. The ability to stop the run is something that's going to have to come forward if the Browns are going to have success on defense. Take a listen.
So, you just need to have that mentality that you're going to make the play. You got to make the play because, 10 other guys are tired too. And so we have the mentality that we're going to make every play. Our defense is going to be the defense that we want to be.
What kind of a defense is this first team defense going to be when the season rolls out?
Gosh, it's going to be a bend but don't break defense, I don't believe it. They're not going to be the dominant defense that Nathan and I have talked about in Cleveland Browns Daily, and I think it really does start up front. I think as much as we'd like to peg in Danny Shelton into that spot, Danny Shelton's still learning about the schemes in this defense and learning his role in this defense, because too many times I saw him moving laterally along the line of scrimmage, and doesn't matter if he's 135 pounds or 335 pounds, when you get moving lateral, it's easy to have an offensive lineman push you by, and it just makes the defense harder for DeMario Davis as well as Christian Kirksey.
The one thing that I will say is, let's not forget that these guys who are working along the defensive front, two new starters at a minimum, because it was Randy Starks and Desmond Bryant last year.
Right.
Your inside linebackers, two new starters, because last year it was Craig Robertson and Carlos Dansby. Your safeties, two new starters again. The corners, you don't have Joe Hayden out there yet. So it is a work in progress, and it's a very young team, especially on the defensive side of the ball, outside of really Tremont Williams. So this is a young team, and they're trying to find their way. I think it will get better, but are there issues to address? Clearly.
All right, gentlemen, we'll come back. We're going to talk a little bit more. Have you been watching the last two games and you've had a chance and opportunity to even come out here to Berea to see training camp? What players are jumping off the page? Who is standing out? We'll talk about that next on Dog Pound Report. Welcome back. We're live in Berea for Dog Pound Report on a temperature chilling out a little bit here in Northeast Ohio.
Hint of fall in the air.
It feels like, high school football will be here before
it
you know it this weekend. College football and, of course, the Browns coming up in September. Let's talk about individual play and guys that have jumped off the page. And I mean, we've been talking about this for 2 weeks, but he really jumped out the other night against Atlanta. That was Carl Nassib. Here's what he's up to and what he had to say.
I don't really care about stats or anything like that. I just want to, you know, win games, and I should help my team more next time, definitely. I just want to continue to work hard and, you know, do my absolute best to help my team win.
All right, we hear from Carl Nassar. You know, it's funny, there's a rock that sits over there right at the end of the building. It's Chris Spielman, and we all remember that he was here in 99, didn't get to play because of injury, but and they're not exactly the same kind of player, but when it comes to motor, I think of those two in the same light when it comes to drive, desire, and passion. It's the same kind of guy.
Yeah, it's the guy who was a walk-on at Penn State and ended up leaving his career as the person who led the nation in sacks. And he's come out 2 sacks already in 2 preseason games. Would have had a third, but it was negated by a penalty on Justin Gilbert down the field. You saw it in the game against Green Bay when he chased down that screen from the backside, the way he got his sack. Relentless is a good word for him, but I think it's the guy that's maybe is very talented as well, very strong.
Yes.
And he gets himself into a place that not many people get into when he goes on the field.
He definitely does. And I think at the start of this football season, I think Carl Nassib is a great niche player for this defense. There are things that he does very, very well, and I think it's on Ray Horton to develop a scheme of how you get him on the field and to put him in situations where he can be his best.
Sure.
And I think high motor, as you said, relentless to the football. He's got long, gangly arms, and he uses them, so he's very, very active. The one thing that I did see in that Atlanta football game is when they were dedicated to running football, he can get washed. Especially when he's lining up a 3 technique, 285 pounds is going to get mowed by some 320-pound lineman.
Sure. All right, we're talking about guys jumping off the page. Emmanuel Ogba is the other one.
Obviously, the guy's just a physical specimen, unlike really any we've seen here in Cleveland for quite some time. Flashed a little bit more, I think, in the Green Bay game. I think that Atlanta game, same thing. It's a zone blocking scheme. It was a new thing for, I think, for him and for Nassib to see. And, yeah, I think he struggled a little bit there. But you can tell this guy is going to be special when he can put it all together because he's got all the tools in the world.
He really does. And I think he's very comfortable. And I think it shortened down his learning curve. Learning outside linebacker was going to be a tough task for him, especially to make an impact early in the season. But getting him in a defensive line where he's comfortable with his hand on the ground, you will see those flash plays from him simply because he is that physical specimen.
I know we're talking about guys jumping off the page, and I know we talked about him a little bit in the first segment, but Terrell Pryor is definitely a guy that has jumped off the page. We get his thoughts on this start here through 2 preseason games.
I just got to continue to get better. I don't want to shoot, you know, too far or what I am or what I'm not. You know, I just want to continue to get better, make plays when I have an opportunity, and that's it. You know, I control what I can control, and just try to do the best I can.
Nathan, he is all about big plays. You talked about the chunk offense, and both of you guys have been talking about it throughout Dog Pound Report. He is like the prime example of what we're going to see, at least I hope we're going
to
see.
Well, let's go back to Week 17 against Pittsburgh. 40-yard catch, 49-yard in the opener, 50-yarder this week with the touchdown. So, yes, he has been a big play guy, but still the play to me, and I know these big plays are exciting. I love the big catch against Green Bay, but when he made that comeback route on Sam Shields on third down, that showed to me diversity in his route tree. It showed to me that he can help us in many situations. His development, nothing short of phenomenal. A tip of the cap to him.
I agree, and I think that this is the most humble Terrell Pryor I think most people have ever seen, even for Buckeye fans. And the one thing that we know is he comes to work every day. And he is dedicated to his craft beyond anything that I've ever seen, because he understands that targets will be limited when we do get Josh Gordon back and we do get Corey Coleman back. So he wants to make the largest impact and develop the most trust that he could possibly develop with Coach Al Saunders as well as Hugh Jackson, so that Hugh Jackson is forced to take a couple shots down the field with Terrell Pryor.
Well, just think about it. There's going to be a point in this season where he's the third receiver that defenses are worried about. Gordon, Coleman, and then Pryor, not to mention Barnage, not to mention Duke maybe out of the backfield, or RG3 running, or Crow running. So he's going to have a lot of favorable opportunities, especially down in the red zone, where I think he can be an impact player. And Al Saunders shared this with me. He said, if I told Terrell Pryor we could go out there at 6:15 in the morning and run routes all day long, that's what he would do. The CBA is the one thing that limits how much work he puts in, but he said his work ethic off the charts.
Outstanding. All right, we'll see you next week on Dog Pound Report, and hopefully we'll see some stuff out of Tampa as well. All right, when we come back, we'll go through the big headlines of the week. We'll bring in the Mad Scribble, Andrew Gribble from ClevelandBrowns.com. Stick around. More Dog Pound Report live from Berea next. Welcome back to Dog Pound Report out here in Berea. We are at the Browns facilities as we get ready for game number 3 of the preseason And we love hanging out on Sunday mornings with Andrew Gribble from ClevelandBrowns.com. It's almost like, you know, the good old days where you opened up the paper on Sunday morning, had a cup of coffee, and had a little conversation about the Browns. So, welcome.
What's going on, guys?
Good morning.
It feels good. Morning. Nice.
Temperature's a little bit down, but
preparing
everything else
for Tampa,
is right.
though, this is going to make us a little soft, though, going into Monday.
let me get your thoughts on Tampa, because, you know, we talked about this before. Going to Buffalo last year was a big reality check for this team. Should we expect the same kind of thing this week in Tampa?
Well, I certainly hope the team responds maybe a little bit better than they did in Buffalo last year, because I think that first full pads practice, it just wasn't very good for the Browns on either side of the ball, particularly the wide receivers. Maybe that's what I'll be watching the most this year, to see the night and day difference between this wide receiving core and the one you had last year. I think that they can gain a lot of confidence going against those Tampa Bay DBs. But that, outside of 11-on-11, those one-on-one wide receiver DB drills can be the most entertaining and physical, and I'll have my eye on that.
How important is it to take this team on the road for a week? And I mean, it's like fifth grade camp, I think, in some ways. You really get to know who your classmates are. You really get to know it here.
Yeah, well, I think it's good for some bonding. I think that it's a great test against a rising team in the NFC South and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And as you talked about, it's a good measuring stick to see where you are, especially for these guys. When you go and practice, I think when you go, sometimes you go against the same guys every day, you know their tendencies so well, they know yours. This is a whole new environment. So I think this is a great opportunity. And look, for a team that's going to be on the road for five of the first seven games, the more experience that they can get going on the road, going through that process for a young team, I think the better.
Corey, go ahead.
I said we joked about the weather, but I mean, this is a real experience that they need. I mean, it was a warm training camp here in Berea, but it's going to be hot in Tampa Bay. It's going to be very hot early in the season against Miami, too.
All right. Corey Coleman and Josh Gordon, I want to see these guys play. Are they going to play this week?
It's looking more and more likely. I think it was a good sign that you saw both of them go through warm-ups on Thursday, put the pads on, everything like that. I think, you know, in a real game situation, both those guys would have probably been available. I think you can say a lot about a lot of the guys right now. Extra precaution in the preseason, but as Hugh Jackson said Friday, you want these guys to get some experience before the season starts.
Yeah, it's hugely important for them. It's hugely important for Corey Coleman and RG3 to take some reps. Less so with Josh Gordon, but you want to get those now because you don't have them until week five. But you're going to need Corey Coleman week number one. So I fully expect them to go. They went through warm-ups. They both looked very good. They had the pads on. And I think we'll see Joe Hayden as well. I think Hugh Jackson stated plain as day on Friday how important it is, and I think we're going to see it this week, finally.
All right, as we look at the wide receivers, how many are they going to carry? Five? Are they going to carry six? And when you get to week five, you got to think that beyond the three that we've already talked about, Hawkins and Higgins are the other two. I'm not crazy,
yeah,
am I?
I think you could do 6 to 7 depending on the roles that those players, those last receivers, will have on special teams. I think if you can, like a guy like a Ricardo Lewis, who was out this past week, but I think he is a guy, if you're looking at those rookie wide receivers, he's proven that he can play a lot of different varieties of teams. I think Higgins, as we saw him early in the action on Thursday, I think he's in a good place right now with getting on this team and having a pretty good role. But I wonder if you just exclude Josh Gordon from the conversation when you make the 53-man roster decision in September and then evaluate it when you get to week five, because then a lot of things can change those first few weeks of the season, including injuries. So I think you just completely exclude him from the decision you make in September.
All right, beyond practicing in Tampa this week, they will play the Buccaneers this week. Here's a sneak peek on what we might see, especially with some of the guys we talked about, coming up this week. All right, well, let's just talk about it. What more will we see?
Look, it's game three. This is the final dress rehearsal in the preseason. This is going to be the most extended action for the first team on both sides of the ball. So what I hope we can see when you're going against Doug Martin, the number two running back in all of the National Football League last year, we want to see some improvement on that run defense. And I think the fans want to see this offense for three quarters, see the variation, see what we're going to get, especially with Coleman and Gordon out there. So I expect more fireworks on offense, and I expect an improved effort defense. And again, a good test. Jameis Winston, Mike Evans, Vincent Jackson, Doug Martin, this is a good offense they're going against.
This is a team that wants to make the playoffs this year, and they believe that they can make the playoffs because they have Jameis going into his second season. It'll be interesting to see how they attack this Browns defense. I look back at last year, it seemed like they wanted to get Jameis' feet wet and kind of threw him out there, and the Browns really exposed him, gave him a really hard time. He threw some interceptions. Now, if they just go balance, Doug Martin is as good of a test that this defense is going to face.
I also think that when you get into this third preseason game and you get into the third and fourth quarter, it gets chippy because guys know their job's on the line, and they know they're trying to create tape for other teams.
Well, the other thing is there are limited reps. So the guys that actually get those reps once the starters come out, that's going to tell you a lot about where they are on the depth chart, what the battles are. I think a guy like Dominique Alexander has continued to help himself. Derek Kindred has continued to help himself. Can Tank Carter, who I think has helped himself, can he hold
Great
these
team.
Young guys up? That's what we're going to see at the end of that game.
I think we'll get a clearer picture of the defensive backfield if we see Joe Hayden in this game, because then you're going to really see what the pecking order is behind those veteran DBs that are going to be starting.
All right, Gribbs, ClevelandBrowns.com. Make sure you check him out. He'll also be with us on the Ford Sports Sunday tonight as well. We come back, your questions. on Twitter, AskDPR, next on Dog Pound Report.
When you spray my hair.
Welcome back to Dog Pound Report, live from Berea. And live is something I do mean. Grips, we had you stick around for a second. There's a little bit of breaking news this morning.
Yeah, you know, the Browns added, as we talked, to a crowded wide receiver room. You added a fresh body in there with wide receiver Josh Boyce. Fourth-round pick, played for the Patriots and the Colts. Could change the scenery, perhaps could do him well, but he's going to have to compete. Another wide receiver, Dennis Parks, waived injured. He's been dealing with an injury the last couple weeks.
All right, before we get to your Twitter questions, there's something that I've been thinking about the whole show. When Joe Hayden returns, this is for both of you, when he returns, how much of an impact can one player have on the defense as far as making you think, well, this defense might be better than we think?
Well, it depends what Joe Hayden you get. If Joe Hayden comes back and plays at an elite level, it allows Ray Horton to not have to worry about one half of the field. It allows him to be more aggressive with his blitzes. It allows him to double, say, the number two receiver so that you have help there and you can lock down the number one guy with Joe Hayden, or vice versa. Sometimes teams will throw, if Joe Hayden's playing at a great level, you go lock down the number two receiver, and we're going to go, for example, with the Falcons, you go lock down Mohamed Sanu, he's going to be a non-factor in this game, and we're going to double Julio Jones on every play on the other side. So it opens up a lot if he plays at that elite level.
Or you could do the reverse strategy, because Joe Hayden's got a good history against Julio Jones.
Sure.
And you're putting Tremont Williams in a better situation. So that, it's just a kind of a chain reaction, a trickle-down effect, and you're putting the guy like Justin Gilbert, who struggled a bit, he's going to be more on the sidelines and coming as a reserve instead of being there every single snap.
All right, time now for Twitter, AskDPR, as all you have to do is use that hashtag. Let's give you the first question that we have today, and is, has RG3 changed his game in order to stay healthy, becoming more of a pocket passer and less scrambler, or scrambling less?
Listen, the bottom line is, if you were to ask anybody around the National Football League what the best quarterbacks do consistently, it's win from the pocket. So if RG3 wants to be the long-time answer as a franchise quarterback, he's got to be able to prove that he can win from the pocket consistently. And we're seeing him take this coaching. This is a guy who never got the ball out in less than 3 seconds at any point in his career. He's at 2.43 right now. So I think it's key to his development. I think he knows it. To be the guy that he wants to be in this league, he's got to become a pocket passer.
Yeah, and I was about to say, he realizes this. This is what happened in Washington, and I think it led to kind of his departure there. I think he was used a ton as a runner, as a rookie, to the point where he ended up getting hurt at the end of the season. He knows his future is in the pocket, and I think he's taken every step to address it.
All right, next question. Have the Browns' offseason choices really created a solid offensive line?
I think that's still a work in progress. I think we saw some good from Cam Irving. We saw also the bad snap from Cam Irving. I thought Austin Pastor had a nice game. Greco was playing like a monster in the game. And then Betonio and Thomas. So I think that some of the choices, and especially Spencer Drango, who I know the coaches are very high on, yes, I feel better about our offensive line than we have in the past, but it's still a work in progress.
I like the competition that they cultivated at right tackle to address a really significant loss of Mitchell Schwartz, who was a very solid, maybe an underappreciated player by the fans in the last few years. But I think you've now seen Austin Pastor beat out essentially three other guys for that job. So you've got the best possible option at right tackle. Cam Irving, he's going to get better as it goes, but he's still relatively new at the center position. Just got to get the snaps better.
All right, we have 30 seconds. Final thought.
Well, you know, I'm just looking forward to Tampa. I think this is fans don't get to see these joint practices, but we in the media get to see this. It is a great atmosphere on the field for those, especially the padded practice.
You got one word. Go.
Explosive.
Browns, Tampa. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 11:30. Thanks for watching Dog Pound Report.